There are far worse things to lose than one's possessions. Even Job's great faith wilted when he lost his health. First your savings, then your job, then your children. Finally, you learn you have terminal cancer. How would you handle the loss of everything? Would you curse God and die, as Job's wife urged? Stay tuned for answers to some really tough questions. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, Dr. Lutzer continues his series, God, Why Me?, as we join him for more of his message, God, I've Lost Everything.
Job's wife evidently thought that if her husband could just die, he'd escape all the misery. And throughout time, there have been those who have thought that if they could just commit suicide, it would end it all. There have been people who have phoned me, insisting on an answer to the question, if I commit suicide as a Christian, will I still go to heaven? Because I want to commit suicide so badly, but I still want to be in heaven too. I want you to know that suicide is never the answer. Don't jump off the boat until it makes it to the other side of the shore. Suicide is not the answer. God's grace is going to be sufficient. His ability to keep you and to lead you until it is His time to die is what we believe to be scripturally and solidly based. In fact, if Job had died here, he would have missed what happens in chapter 41 and 42 of his book, and he would have missed the bountiful blessing of God and the insights into God's character, which would have been totally missed if he'd have simply said, where is the escape hatch? I am going to die. Well, we have our tape recorder with us, and Job's friends, by the way, come. Verse 11, and we won't say much about them, except to say that they come from three different countries. Job is a very famous man. And the friends hear about his distress, and they come, and they do something very wise. It says in verse 13, they sat down on the ground with him 7 days and seven nights, and no one was speaking to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. And may I say that that's the thing that they did that was absolutely right. If they had just kept sitting there, we wouldn't have had so many chapters of speeches, for one thing. And for another, we would have discovered that at the end, God would not have been so angry with what they said. But we're ahead of the story. Job has everything. Oh, how wonderful it is to serve God. Job now has nothing, and he begins to moan. At first, he accepted his adversity with a great deal of tranquility and worship, but it begins to get through him with his health now gone. He begins to moan and to go through a deep period of depression. That's chapter 3. We can't read the entire chapter, though you should do that on your own, and you will find this to be one of the most moving soliloquies that has ever been written. Job says in verse 3, let the day perish on which I was to be born, and the night which said, a boy is conceived. May that day be darkness. Let not God above care for it, nor let the light shine on it. Let darkness and black gloom claim it. Let a cloud settle on it. Let the blackness of the day terrify it. You'll notice that he begins to move from faith to despair. And when we pick it up in verse 11, he now goes from understanding to perplexity. And he is very perplexed, and he begins to ask the question, why? Why did I not die at birth and come forth from the womb and expire? He goes on to say in verse 13, if that would have happened, I would have lain down and been quiet and would have slept. Then would I have been at rest with kings and with counselors of the earth who rebuilt ruins for themselves. What an interesting insight. The kings and the counselors thought that they were building huge castles and monuments. And what are they now? They are ruins. He says, I would have been able then to be with those who built ruins for themselves. Or with the princes who had grief. He says in verse 20, why is light given to him who suffers and life to the bitter of soul? If God knows that Job is going to go through this grief, If God knows that he is going to feel so desperate that he would like to die, why then live at all? What is the purpose of it? What about those who long for death? They seek for it like hidden treasures. Verse 22, who rejoice greatly, they exult when they find the grave. They want to die and they delight when it comes. Verse 23, why is light given to a man whose way is hidden, whom God has hedged in? For my groaning comes at the sight of my food. I've lost my appetite, I can't even eat. For my cries pour out like water. For what I fear has come upon me and what I dread befalls me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I am not at rest, and turmoil comes. God, why? Suddenly, Job is up against a God he doesn't know. And the Job that we would have interviewed at the beginning, oh yes, you just serve God and he will bless you. Why, he is so loving that he multiplies his blessings upon those who fear him. And just look at my lovely family and see my crops and my herds and my 10 children who are the envy of everybody in town. And it's because I serve God. Now it's a different story. The kids are dead. He's lost everything that he owns. His own health is gone. He's in pain and grief. And his wife has not been the support that she should be. And now he begins to curse his day. Could I say, by the way, that Job is in the same position as some people in retirement homes today? They say to themselves, I can't serve anymore. Well, Job couldn't serve anymore. There was nothing that he could give to God. Now he didn't even have any wealth to give to God. In fact, there are people today who can no longer serve, but they in turn must be served. And there they are, day after day, wondering why it is that they do not have death come to them when perhaps just across the street there is a child who dies at the age of 2 or 3 or an infant. And we look at it and we ask with Job, why is light given to him who suffers into the bitter of soul? What's the purpose in it all? Now, I want you to know something. Job did something very wise here in this chapter. He spilled his grief verbally to God and to his friends. I don't believe that Job here was sinning at all, because he spoke his feelings and he spoke what was known, and God knew how he was feeling. Why not tell God how you are feeling? The psalmist did it. That's why we like the Psalms when we're going through times of grief. It's because the psalmist comes before the Lord and he simply says, God, this is the way in which I feel. And he allows all of the hurt and the bitterness and the disappointment to spill out. And why not? Because God is the beautiful, wonderful counselor. And you know something? God already knows that it is in the heart and he can take it. Tell him. Last week I heard of a woman who was praying, and she was living with a man who was an alcoholic, and she was praying out loud and he was close by, and she said, oh God, you know that my husband is a drunk. And the man rebuked her and said, no, don't say that, just tell him I'm sick. Well, when you're talking to God, you can tell him what the truth is, because he knows it anyway. Last time I gave you 4 lessons that I said I wanted you to remember for the rest of your life. I hope that you remember them for at least the last 7 days. What I'd like to do now is to give you 3 more to add to that 4 and to give you a total of 7 lessons. And these 3 can be added to the last 4, which you wrote down so judiciously last week. Lessons. Number 1, notice that godly people are sometimes the most sorely tested. They are sometimes the most sorely tested. What does the Bible say about Job? He was an upright man, blameless, and he served God and turned away from evil. And what does he do in verse 5 of chapter 1? But he offers a sacrifice in behalf of himself and his children. It almost seems as if at the very time when Job was reaffirming his commitment to God, it is then that tragedy broke loose. I hope that you have lived long enough to realize that you cannot tell a person's spirituality by evaluating how many trials come into their lives. There are people in this congregation this morning whom I know, and many of you have shared with me and with other members of the pastoral staff the incredible turmoil and anguish that you are going through. And all of us know that even though you don't know it, when we look into your faces, we see Christ. And it's not because you are not following God. It is not because God is trying to even some kind of score. It is sometimes true that those who are righteous suffer the most. One day Jesus was walking in Israel, and they said to him regarding a man who was born blind, "Who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus said, "Neither, but that the works of God might be made manifest in him." There is a work of God that is taking place in the lives of those of you who are suffering disproportionately. I say that because many of us have not suffered nearly as much as you are suffering. Our day may be coming. Suffering, when you look at it, is haphazard. You can't make sense out of the pattern. Godly people sometimes are the most sorely tested. Job was suffering not because he was unrighteous, as a matter of fact, but because he was righteous. And that's why he attracted the attention of God and the devil in the dialogues that we are now privy to. So first of all, godly people often are most sorely tested. Secondly, I want you to notice that good and adversity come from the same hand. They come from the same hand. Chapter 2, and what is it here? Verse 10. Job says to his wife, "Shall we indeed accept good from God and not adversity? Why is it that we would only accept one and not the other and recognize that both come from God?" One day when we came home from vacation, I was speaking to my family and I said, "You know, God was so good to us. We drove so many thousands of miles. We had no flat tires, no car trouble, no accidents." And just as the words came out of my mouth, it dawned on me, let's suppose we had had an accident or a flat tire or some tragedy, would that now have meant that God wasn't good? If you have that theory that God has to always be giving you good things, and I put good here in quotes, in order for him to be good, then the time will come when you will believe that God is evil. Job said, "We accept good from his hand. We must also recognize that there is adversity that comes from his hand, and both of them come from a good God. They come from a hand with nail prints." Well, this is Pastor Lutzer. My friend, if all that you see in your adversity is sorrow, if all that you see is the devil, you are missing out on the opportunity of seeing God. I speak to you today in your sorrow, in your need. Look to him, because he'll be there for you even as he was for Job.
Thank you, Dr. Lutzer. Erwin Lutzer has just wrapped up part two of God, I've Lost Everything, another message in his series, God, Why Me? The Story of Job. Running to Win comes to you from the Moody Church in Chicago. This 8-part series can be yours on CD as our thank you when you give a gift of any amount to support Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Ask about God, Why Me? Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw, all one word, .com. Or write to Running to Win at Box 11174, Chicago, Illinois, 60611. This is Dave McAllister. Monday, the apparent injustice of suffering. Join us then for more from the life of Job on our next Running to Win.